guys. This is Taste Masters with your hosts, David and Wyatt.
I think we're going to start out by tasting the ales, right?
Let's go. So, Sean, you brought us today one of your favorites at the moment, ales, from the Fisher Brewing Company. This one's called the Mild Child, I believe.
Mild Child, yep.
From that we're starting with?
Fisher Brewing.
Let's pop her open. So what makes this beer so good?
I mean, like, milds in general, I think are great, especially when they're well done, like this one. Because they're still, like, really low alcohol, but they have a lot more flavor than what something with that little of alcohol would usually have.
What's the ABV on the Mild Child?
I believe that one's 4%. So, yeah, I made a mild once, and it was 3.5%. So, I'm a big fan of milds.
What else would you like, my friend?
And this one is even my favorite. I always tell people it's my kryptonite if it's on cask.
Really? Because,
like, that level of carbonation, it's just, like, I just want to keep drinking it.
Yeah.
Is it on cask? Is it's it good, what's yeah. carbonation?
I mean, what is on cask, for those who don't know what cask is?
So, that's, like, the traditional way to serve English beer. This is an English style. And it's usually, like, a little bit warmer, around, like, 50 degrees. And the carbonation level is much lower. So, like, you don't get a nice head of, like, foam, like, lasting foam, I guess, like we see now. It's, just not as carbonated. So, you can drink, like, if it's not as carbonated, then you can taste the malty flavors much better. So, that's kind of the appeal of the cask. It just, it gets more flavorful. It's a little bit more warm, a little less carbon dioxide in there. And you just get the full experience.
Is that close to, like, a nitro tap? Is that similar to, like, a nitro tap?
Yeah, nitro is just, like, made to imitate that.
Gotcha.
But it's like a traditional cask, lets air inside the keg.
Mm-hmm. Like gravity fed.
Yeah, so. But I think you can buy them now that don't do that. But, yeah, they're cool.
I really enjoy this.
That's good, right?
It's really good. It's a little bit darker than when we had those American lagers, light lagers. It's tasty.
Yeah, it's like almost brown. Like very light brown. Almost red.
It's full of flavor. I really do like that. Honestly. Yeah.
No, I mean, there's like a little bit of like chocolatey to it almost.
Yeah.
Like really bready. Like if it's like burnt bread crust, something like that.
Yeah.
But then when you drink it, like, you're like, oh, it has a lot of flavor, but I don't feel full from it.
Right.
No, it's not super heavy.
Mm-hmm. I thought this was going to be heavy.
Yeah.
You know, heavier,
yeah.
But it's not.
And that's what I think when people see dark beer, they kind of automatically
almost shy away from it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's, darker than I expected it to be, and at the same time lighter than I expected it to be. Darker like color, but overall like body, it's lighter than I thought it would be. It's nice. It's nice. More like, I don't want to say burnt, but like
that toastiness almost.
Yeah, like kinda a toastier like flavor than there. I expected. Like a nice,
I think burnt,
like
more burnt,
like bread crust, like a dark bread crust.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I enjoy this one. And this is your go-to at the moment. Well.
If I'm ever at Fisher and say it on drafts, yeah, I always get that.
Beautiful.
Like, hands down.
What would you pair this with? Good. I'm curious. What would you personally pair this with?
I don't do a lot of pairing.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it'd go really well with, like, pretty much any caramelized meat, I would say. Probably go good with some fish and chips. Classic pub meal.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it has, like, those kind of heavy...
Like a rotisserie chicken, like caramelized meat?
Like a grilled red meat, yeah. Yeah, something you can get some caramelization on.
Nice.
Because usually, yeah, typically, like, any like an amber or anything like that, you just want to get kind of similar flavors, I guess.
Like this. Yeah. It's beautiful. Yeah. Well done, Fisher Brewing, tell you what. So on the crushability, though, I don't think this one is as crushable as a light lager or an American lager. But what would you put this, Sean, on crushability scale of 1 to 10?
See, on the CO2, like we have now, I would still say it's high up there, like 6 or 7.
So but, super, like a lingering
but
flavor.
If it's on cask, it's like 8.
Yeah.
You can just...
How often do they put it on cask?
Usually every time he gets a new batch, he'll put like a couple kegs
Heel,
on
so are
cask.
You familiar with the brewer?
Yeah, there's 4 guys that own it.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So when you guys, when you talk to other brewmasters, I'm curious, you just kind of nerd out almost?
Sometimes, yeah.
Do you guys kind of flex them on, like, my beer does this, it's kind of better? Do you guys, like, just cheer that it's just literally kind of a, hey, yeah, this is a great job. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like, oh, man, this is awesome. What'd you do?
Like, beautiful.
Like, trying to figure out what they what they do, so.
Have you ever had a brewer, like, you make a style that you're really excited about, like a bitter, and do you ever feel like another brewer kind of, like, bites that? Like, oh, he made a bitter and it was super good.
Yeah.
I'm going to make a better bitter. Like, one up you?
No, because, like, so, I mean, bitter's a good example. Mild's a good example because, like, they don't really sell as well, but that's definitely a brewer's beer because I think most of the time brewers would go in there and really appreciate that. Whereas most of the time the public wouldn't. So,
interesting.
But, yeah, there's definitely not that, like, one-up attitude.
Does that frustrate you that the public doesn't really see eye-to-eye to the brewer?
No, because I get it. Like, I mean, I think when I was starting out, I probably wouldn't have tried that first. Like, I would have...
Been most popular?
Yeah, it's like tough to go back and think what I was drinking, but I don't think I probably would, like, try the mild right away or something.
Gotcha. No.
Or I'd say, like, I don't know what that is. I won't try it, so.
Have you done that where you've drank a beer and you just go, I need to know what this is and how to brew something like this?
Yeah, like, back when I lived somewhere that got, you know, better distribution, like bars with lots of beers on tap, I would just try something. It's like, that's fantastic. Like, I need to figure this out. Or, like, at least some component of that beer.
Do you have a beer that you brew now that you, like, learned about that way? Like, you tried something on tap and you're like, oh, my God, I need to make this.
Kind of my Sean version of it, almost.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Dunkel Lager was definitely similar, like, the ones I had in Germany. Like, I had those, and I'm like, this is great. I need to figure this out. So, that one... I feel like everything probably has, like, some inspiration from somewhere. It's like, I mean, beer's been around for thousands of years, and
yeah.
I mean, nothing's really unique at this
point.
Nothing's new under the sun. That's, like, a quote that I hear relatively often. Nothing's new under the sun, but I don't know who said it. It's a good quote, though. I mean, like,
yeah.
I think you're doing something unique. Like,
yeah,
there
you're right now. There. I mean,
billions of people who have probably done it.
Yeah.
So you mentioned thousands of years. We wanted to talk about beer history, like, thousands of years. Not like what's the history of beer? Like, thousands of years is that's a lot. That's a big chunk of years, you know.
It's a
like
lot. Yeah, pretty much since civilization, I'd say.
Really,
I don't know the actual date for it, but is it like 3000 BC or something? I want to say.
We have 6,000 for Mesopotamia.
Okay, so yeah.
Yeah.
It's just like 3,000 off. But that was like probably around, I mean, it was discovered, I think, before then.
Yeah.
And there's, you know, kind of murky history with it as to how it was discovered, I think. The one that I think sounds most plausible is that, you know, people used to make, like, a gruel with grain and water, and then they probably found out one day that if you heat the water up then and let it sit for a little bit, then it gets sweet, and that's essentially, like, mashing.
Gruel is, what's...
Well, I just say gruel, like, just generally, like, sludge-looking stuff.
Just, like,
you know?
Mashing, like, grains and shit?
Yeah,
with water,
just,
and...
like, yeah, just, like, your base nutrients, so...
Yummy.
Yeah, and then, you know, someone might have made that and then just forgot about it, and then it fermented, and they tried it, and, you know, kind of discovered beer. Like, I mean, it's really murky, obviously, because, like...
That'd be,
like,
that'd
no,
be an
no
adventurous
one's
person.
Like, no one's writing things at this
I
point.
I mean, you
history,
want, you're curious, and so human curiosity, you're like, what is
this?
This
smells
like,
weird.
This is kind of good, actually.
Like, or maybe they're like, that was my last grain. I gotta drink that.
Could be. I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. So then I think once they found out, like, oh, I ate that and I feel good.
Maybe they tried to store it. Maybe they just put
that's another
bunch of stuff in, like, pots
too.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
And then
come
6
back.
Months later, they're like, this one smells weird, but whatever, we got to eat.
Exactly.
Right, and I can't waste it because we've worked so hard on it. I can see. Yeah, that's
makes
possible. Because I know in China, they had it recorded 5,000 years ago, approximately, and they talk about some of beer stone. Do you know, are you familiar with beer stone? I heard that term. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, like found on the inside of the pots.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
It's essentially just like calcium.
So oh, East. Interesting.
Yeah.
That's Derek, the assistant brewmaster at Trap Tank, mentioned that there was like beer stone in the lines. And like that's why you guys clean is to get rid of that beer stone. Like beer stone was a thing common. There then. Can be.
Yeah, it's yeah. I mean,
and beer stone is a thing now.
Yep. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Well, that's how they knew that those pots were used for beer, is because of the presence of the beer stone.
Gotcha.
Yep.
Question time.
Yeah. What is beer now, and how is it different than it was 6,000 BC?
I mean, it's still pretty similar. I think the only thing that's gotten improved is process, but you know, it's water, barley, hops, yeast. And originally when it started out, it was kind of just water and barley. They didn't really add hops until, probably around like the thousands, I guess you'd call it, around there.
The early thousands.
Yes.
Viking time.
Yeah. So. Yeah, back then it was just the barley and water, and then they'd get yeast from the air that's on the grain already.
It's like a natural yeast.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that different than how you get yeast in beer now?
Yep, yeah. So
like dramatically different?
Yeah, absolutely. Like there's just places you can buy yeast from. That's all they do is that they just bank yeast and then they grow it up for you.
Beautiful. So it kind of saves you a step in essence. Because if you were supposed to do it the old school way, it'd take you
forever. You don't want to drink it either.
Ever. Really? Why is that?
Because, I mean, so you do that, but you don't get... There's everything else still in the beer that is in the air or in your unsanitized thing. So, I mean, going back to... I mean, there's souring organisms on grain also. So a lot of times you'd have to drink the beer pretty quickly because, like, it spoils, start getting sour.
Like, how quickly? Like,
I mean, probably within like
they would heat it up
like
and
within
like,
weeks
really?
Of being finished, you know.
Because
well, they didn't have hops at that point either, so hops also act as a protective.
And it would sour, but now sour beer is a style.
Yeah, I mean they're very different though. Like you can get some really bad organisms if you don't have proper hygiene, which they didn't at the time. Because a lot of the brewing, I mean, if you fast forward, you know. So whenever they started actually having dedicated breweries, they were still just using like wood thing, like heating up wood vessels, and then like fermenting in wood. And they didn't have sanitation back then. They didn't have microscopes, or they had no idea they didn't know there was yeast in there.
Yeah, they just thought like the gods were blessing there.
Yeah, they're just like, well, we know this works. So, I mean, there's lots of history behind like the way they would make the stuff ferment, like. Nordic history has like a pine branch they would throw in batch to batch because they thought it was like a spirit that they would.
Interesting.
The same pine branch?
Yeah. And so what was actually happening is yeast was on that pine branch and they were putting it from batch to batch. You know?
Would all their beers taste the same because they had the same yeast?
It'd be different.
No, because like they had no scientific knowledge of anything. So like everything. I mean, it'd be similar, you know, but their society was built on beer. Like, almost every society in history has had beer in it, like, just about.
So you've been mentioning sanitation and how it needs to be clean. When did that become we figured this out, when we figured out what bacteria was?
Probably when we figured out what yeast was with Pasteur.
Okay.
So, like, that's the, like, development of microscopes and things like that.
When was the microscope?
Louis Pasteur. I think that's like 1870s. I don't know, it's say
late
there.
1800s. It's gotta be Louis Pasteur.
Yeah,
I'm not very familiar.
No,
with
you're
my,
fine. But I mean, it's great because
microscope history.
But when microscope came out and we figured out that there were microorganisms, because I know you take cleaning your vessels and your equipment very serious because it can infect the other batches.
Yeah.
Sean's a serious guy with a serious set of skills.
He is.
Yeah, I mean, brewing's like 90% cleaning. It's...
Yeah.
Wow.
It's like, that's all you do.
Yeah.
So...
I mean, when did that really change the game when sanitation came in?
I think... I mean, there's a couple things in play at that point. Refrigeration was also happening, so that changed a lot. And then sanitation, yeah, that would definitely be a big thing. And I think even before then, like, I guess... Even before Pasteur, it was probably a little bit more noticeable because I forget his name, but the reason there was brewing seasons in Germany, like, it's actually against the law to, you know, brew in the summertime.
Really?
Because they found out you're getting, like, these off flavors if you made beer in the summertime. And that's because of those warmer temperatures, there's more spoilage organisms in the air. So they were getting more of those in their beer, and they're making bad-tasting beer, so they outlawed brewing.
Can you imagine being arrested for making bad-tasting beer?
Yeah. Well, I mean, it was, like, you know, noticeably bad. Like, yeah. It wasn't subjectively bad. It was just, like, it was rotten, you know.
Or yeah. Spoiled. Gotcha, yeah.
So they, I think there's definitely a working knowledge, like, in the history, but then, like, yeah, once microbiology became...
A thing.
Relevant.
Yeah.
Then it became like, oh, okay, we can do this.
But then it changed. So if you can go back to the first civilization, if you will, that figured out how to brew properly, and I do that in quotes, mm-hmm. properly, who would you think that would be? We're going back to Germans? Yeah, we're going earlier than that?
The Sumerians. I mean, that's way a long time ago. But, and then, like, using clay pots, and, like, they would allegedly, you know, drink their grain water, which was beer, like, out of straws in their pots.
Yeah. Right.
That's why the straw was invented. Beer. I got it reeds. Yeah. So they could get through, like the shit on the top.
Yeah.
Like, it would ferment, and, like, bubbles and grains and whatever would come to the top.
Yeah, exactly. To keep it out.
So hops weren't added until...
Yeah, you said they're relatively new hops.
Yeah, I mean, there was definitely a newer development. They would add what would be called a gruit, which is, like, a blend of herbs and spices, which kind of acted as a preserving agent. But once they started adding hops, that's kind of, it added bitterness also, so it balanced out the sweetness.
Because was beer super sweet back in the day?
Probably.
Before hops? Like.
Yeah, and that's why you use gruit also, because, like, there'd be kind of bitter hops.
Gruit was like oregano.
No, it was parsley. Like, God, what do they use? Like wormwood or like St. John's wort. Seeing like all the hallucinogenic ones, but
makes sense.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, just a bunch of like
all the
like medicinal herbs. Is gotcha. What they consider now, but they would throw stuff like that in there.
And then they distilled that and made absinthe.
I don't think so.
Interesting.
Yeah. And then once you found hops, then they found that, like, you know, would increase the shelf life of the beer, because a lot of the souring organisms don't like the bitterness,
right?
So that helps, like, allow them to send beer to other places, so export it,
right?
Hops preserve beer, or like bitter things.
Yeah, it's one.
Like, what about that bitterness makes beer last longer?
I actually don't know scientifically. I never looked it up, but I just know that certain strains of lactobacillus don't like living in, like, above 5 IBUs.
Lactobacillus?
Yeah.
Is there, like, the yogurt
stuff? You can't. Yeah, they use that for it.
They use yogurt for beer?
You can use that sour beer.
Interesting.
What? Yeah. Like, they just throw yogurt in their beer?
Yeah, some brewers do that for their kettle sours.
I've got some yogurt in the fridge. Let's see if we can make a sour. We've got
good luck.
It'd be difficult though, wouldn't it?
I just like the idea of putting yogurt.
No,
it would be weird.
Absolutely, a little different.
How much yogurt would you need to make, like?
Yeah, I have the number. It's like,
could you do with like one of those, like, a Dole cups?
It's like, no, it's like a couple of quarts of like the Nancy's yogurt for like a 10-barrel batch.
Yeah. Wow, interesting. Mm-hmm. So then after. So the European, let's go back to, I mean, not go back, let's go to European age.
Yeah.
When they figured out who was the best European, like, who figured it out before anyone else? Who made it popularized, I guess? Who popularized it?
I think, I don't know.
Because, you went to Germany, Belgium, and you liked their style.
Yeah.
The different style, the French have a different style, the Spaniards.
Was there a country that was, like, definitively, like, they have the best beer?
Yeah.
I mean, they all thought theirs was the best.
Right.
So, they're very
opinionated.
Very passionate about
absolutely.
That.
I read something, several years ago about, it was, like, an article written in, I want to say, like, the 16 or 1700s, that was, like, for the health of Germans, Germans should drink lagers, but it's unhealthy for a German to drink an ale, whereas Brits should drink ales, but it's unhealthy for a Brit to drink lagers. Was that like propaganda, or like
that
did beer play a part in medicine? Like, what?
No, that was just, I think, them being
They're like
idiots.
Kind of pompous,
like,
almost.
The Brits are like, fuck the Germans, their beer sucks.
And the Germans are like, screw the Brits because like they have this warm, flat crap.
And then some, like, some doctor was like, well, maybe there's something to this.
Yeah. Right. Probably at that point they didn't require doctors to say that.
Yeah.
But you have Germany being pretty a good staple, you would say, mm-hmm. I think. And then you have, you look at France and Italy, they have, they're more, I feel like they're more wine-based, I don't know.
Like wine-based country.
You know what
yeah.
I'm saying? Mm-hmm. What about the Spaniards in the UK? I know Ireland has.
I have no idea about those. I cannot speak
no, really?
Spaniards. Yeah.
Spaniards, do they have anything? Do you know?
I mean, they're way more like into wine.
More wines than beer heavy?
Yeah. I think a lot of Spanish
wines. Because you have Ireland has, I mean, they're
stout,
famous for
Guinness.
Stouts and Guinness.
Like, and I mean, Scotland had whiskey. Yeah.
So then fast forward European, we're going to go to the U.S., So how has U.S. adopted the beer world, I guess, alcohol?
Like now? Or?
Yeah, I mean, from the beginning, because you have, we have the old school 13 colonies.
Yeah.
Right?
Which, yeah, I think they brought brewing with them in the 13 colonies originals.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't think they had beers much on the frontier, like when we were... going westward,
yeah,
because it's just it spoils. You need, like it doesn't make sense.
So you would take that knowledge, basically, whoever the fur trappers or whoever came across.
Well, they probably should drink like whiskey or something, honestly, because it's like easy to store and all that.
Right.
But I mean, then like fast forward to having, you know, more immigrants. Like, you know, had another influx of German immigrants, so there's more lager brewing happening.
Because it was German immigrant heavy.
I mean, we had a lot of immigrants at that time, mm-hmm. but a lot of them were, like, German. Like, a lot of the brewers were German.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That's where lagers come from, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of where they originated.
So would you say that the U.S. has a heavy German influence, then, based out of all the...
No, we have our own thing now, but, like, that's where we're trying to get to. So, I mean, that was, like, in the late 1800s,
mm-hmm.
and then Prohibition hits... And then no one's drinking beer, really.
Right.
And then the problem with Prohibition is once it got lifted, there's this whole generation that wasn't used to drinking beer. They're used to drinking soda, you know, not having any
right.
sort of like full flavored beer. So
right.
that's like kind of where the rise of light beer came.
They want something easy
and people been
drinking.
More crushable.
Yeah, so
that
yeah.
makes so much more sense.
Makes a lot of
because
sense.
It's more sexy, as you say.
Yeah.
The lighter
well,
beers.
Easier, yeah, it's easier to market that way.
Absolutely.
Like, better for you.
That makes way more
stuff,
sense.
So
you're saying if the Prohibition never happened, do you think that, quote-unquote, the sexiness of the beers would still be truer styles?
Yeah, I think so.
That
sure.
is just
like whoever
mind-blowing.
Could make the best stout would
yeah.
be like the most popular beer.
But that's what I'm saying. You
but
guys
then,
would be
yeah, so then we had that drought for so long of like just the mass-produced American adjunct lagers.
Yeah.
And then... like in the 70s and 80s, that's when the home brewing boom started going.
No way.
And that's when people were like, oh,
right.
do more with this. And that's when craft breweries started popping up. And now it's like American craft brewers are just known for innovating and just doing crazy, crazy things.
Right.
And so that's what we're kind of known for now for beer. It's just like, yeah, it's like, I mean, we invented the hazy IPA.
Right.
So.
Well, you were saying earlier today that almost 8,000 breweries
yeah,
in the States?
Yeah, we're getting close to 8,000.
And that's an insane number.
Yeah. And
so,
I forget I mean, that's pretty comparable, the amount, I believe, like, pre-Prohibition, too. Like, we used to have,
oh,
a, lot
really?
Of, we used to have a lot of breweries.
I have that number
yeah.
here in, oh, let's see if I can find it. Where was it? It was, like, 1880s? 1873. We had 4,131 breweries.
Yeah.
And that's the most breweries we had. Like, that was the peak.
And that was with a much smaller population as well.
Right.
So like,
with,
like,
they produced 9 million barrels of beer, and I want to say it was like 7 million people, something like that. That doesn't seem
right. Oh, yeah, it's a way smaller
yeah.
population
yeah.
for that amount of breweries.
Yeah.
But what's interesting is, so I was doing a lot of this research today. By the time we hit, I want to say 1810 or 1910, we dropped to like, 43 or something like that, like a super low number of breweries because the ability to brew like beer in high quantities increased. I want to go back a little bit. You said that beer was like independently created, right? It's like you said China, you said Mesopotamia. Those are pretty far apart from each other. Did like Mesopotamians and introduced beer to China, or China introduced beer to Mesopotamia? Yeah, or was it like,
I have no idea.
Like, I don't know. Was it independent? Yeah. Because in here,
I mean,
like,
it's tough to draw any sort of lines with that.
Like, no one has the OG I created beer kind of thing, and I gave it to everyone else.
Like, it's what spurred civilization.
Yeah.
But super interesting.
Same thing. It's like, who are we crediting the fire to?
Yeah.
You can't really credit the fire
to. It was across, like, many different cultures. Everywhere I've looked up, so, like, today I did a lot of history on beer in the United States. Just, like, kind of looking stuff up. And across the board, when colonists arrived in the United States, first of all, something I thought was funny was the sailors on the Mayflower kicked off the pilgrims because they wanted to make sure they had enough beer for the return trip.
That's typical.
Like, get the fuck off of here.
That's typical. If I'm going on a road trip, I'd be like, jalapeno, we need to have beer in this car.
We gotta have enough beer.
You can't take that luggage.
Yeah, it was such a staple.
Oh my goodness. It's still a thing today.
I was like, we're gonna fill this entire suitcase just with beer. When they came over, like 1587, the natives were brewing beer with corn, right? They didn't have like barley or wheat, but they were still making beer with corn.
Well,
and
they
had
to have something, I think, with the corn, because it doesn't have the enzymatic power to convert.
Gotcha. It just says corn. I don't know what else they add. Mm. But, I mean, like, a few different things say corn, but I'm sure they had something else as well. I don't know if, like, beans or squash or something.
Who knows? Because you have to have something.
You had to have the protein content with the enzymes.
I wonder what they would use.
But then it said in, like, until the lagers were really introduced by Germans, most beer in the United States had some quantity of corn in it. And, like, looking through this, like, George Washington in few years before the Revolutionary War, George Washington, 1754, enters a beer recipe in his notebook.
Yeah, as for a porter.
A porter beer.
A porter.
Really?
He uses a
distiller,
molasses.
Too. Yeah, he's a distiller, so he had access to molasses. So.
No way. This is news to me. Has anyone recreated this porter?
I think so. But
God,
like,
I would love to try this. I would love to try the George Washington porter.
The George Washington porter.
I did try one time a Benjamin Franklin Amber. It was called Benny. It was pretty good, though.
Was it made with keys and electricity or what?
no, but I think they used a kite. This is a super, super good beer.
So, Wyatt, you're pouring a beer right now. What are you pouring at the moment?
So, I've got the New Belgium Fat Tire Belgian White.
Are you a fan of Fat Tire?
Right. Yeah, that's like one of the first ones I had. They had a really good, when they did an organic line, they made a whipped beer that was really, really good. I think this is a pretty close recreation of that.
It's very floral.
Nice wheat beer. Really?
Yeah, the coriander.
It's very, when you smell it, it really does, it's pleasing. It's nice. It's easy.
That's good. It's super light.
It's got some like
it's lighter than I thought it'd be.
It's got like the citrusy kind of flavors too.
Little notes to that.
In this it says wheat ale with
orange peel.
Orange peel. Get that citrus for sure. I pulled up George Washington's small beer recipe as written in his diary. Take a large sifter full of bran hops to your taste. Boil for 3 hours and then strain out 30 gallons into a cooler. Put in 3 gallons of molasses while it's still hot, or draw the molasses into a cooler and strain the beer on it while boiling. Let it stand until it's a little bit more than blood warm. And then put in a quart of yeast. If the weather is very cold, cover it with a blanket and let it work in the cooler for 24 hours. Put in a cask and leave the bung open until it's almost done. And then bottle it that day or the week that it was brewed.
So
does that make sense to you? Because
does that make sense
that,
to you,
oh God, no
Sean?
Because
to me, it's like, the hell does that mean?
Yeah. So you do your boil, add your hops during that, and then obviously don't have a sealed fermenter, so you said put a blanket over it.
That's a good way to seal it.
Yeah. Well, they didn't have anything else. Yeah. I mean, it keeps like the shit out, but like microbes can still get in there, but like nothing big is gonna get in there.
Yeah, like have a leaf fall in there.
Yeah. Exactly.
Cool.
And then put it in the barrel, which is probably sounds like it's a bottling vessel. And then, as soon as it's done fermenting, bottle as quickly as possible because the shelf life is not great at all.
Yeah.
So
how would you be able to recreate that now?
You wouldn't want to.
You wouldn't want to, or could you make it?
Would you drink that?
No.
No.
No. That'd be terrible.
But could you make it a nowadays recipe where it was feasible?
Could you
had
like
a shelf
modify
life?
It?
Yeah. I mean, you just add molasses to it and then like ferment it as normal.
So you could make it kind of like your own George Washington brand?
You could, but like, I, think that's kind of stupid.
Why though? Why do you think it's stupid though?
Because, like, I mean, there's a reason our brewing is very different from the brewing that they did.
Hmm?
Like, they're using the tools they had at their time, and we should use the tools that we have.
But do you think you can make a...
And the flavor profile is going to be very different than that. Like,
oh, 100%.
It's...
Right.
Like, you would not want to drink that beer.
No, but, I mean,
you
I get...
You said it was a porter. Like, yeah. It sounds like it's going to be super different from porters today.
Yeah.
Like, if you try to recreate that, but doing it the specifics your way, would that still be a true porter? A good porter?
Well, I mean, there's no grain bill also for that recipe, so...
You just have to kind of make it up.
So yeah. You have to... You totally
you
change it.
Whatever you have, that's what the farmers would do.
So you couldn't, I mean, if you tried recreating that, it'd be a shitty beer.
Was
like
George,
what Sean was saying.
Was George Washington a pretty big fan of porter? I know that's off topic a little
I don't
bit.
Think he was more of a distiller from what I heard.
Gotcha.
He wasn't that big of a beer guy.
Hmm.
It says here in 1986, George Washington presents his Buy American policy and says that he will only ever drink porters made in America.
Well, because porters were big in England at the time.
And when they brought it over, that's probably the style that they were predominant in.
Yeah. So, yeah, porters were huge. So.
Because nowadays, it's not porter heavy. I don't think the day and age is porter heavy.
No.
I like a good porter,
yeah,
but
I think porter
like
almost
goes back to sexiness.
Yeah.
Lagers are sexier. Ales are sexier than a porter.
Porter was a drink of the working class.
It makes so much sense.
Named after, like, the Doc Porters.
Yeah, it says here that in 1772, a mixture of dark to light malts called porter is concocted in England, but it failed to gain popularity in America.
Yeah.
It also says in 1775, when the Revolutionary War begins, Congress measured out rations of 1 quart of spruce beer or cider per man per day. That was part of rations.
It's only 32 ounces.
So you're telling me that alcohol was a part of rations.
Got two pints.
Yeah. What's spruce beer?
They probably use spruce tips instead of hops, I'm guessing.
Interesting. Yeah. Could you do that now? To like, what would that?
It's a forage ale, dude.
Forage ale.
It's bullshit.
Not a fan.
No.
Not a fan. Good to know. Stay away from forage ale.
Yeah.
Is that like a, like, instead of hops, they can't get a hold of hops?
Whatever. Yeah, that was like that.
We got these spruce trees.
Yeah,
this
but again, it goes back to what Sean said. The resources they had was limited back then.
Like
you're looking at 1700s, late
1700s. 1775.
Right, late 1700s. We're now well beyond that.
Oh, yeah.
Right,
yeah.
But give kudos for what they had.
Well, he did know what yeast was like. He's like,
you're right. He does. He has a quart of yeast. Where does George Washington get his yeast? So they knew before. Like,
well, that's weird. Well, I guess there's probably a sludge. Maybe they called it that.
A nice
even,
yeast sludge.
Yeah.
That's
weird.
Because
I always thought that they... Yeah, that's weird.
Huh.
Same guy that flowed the Delaware and cut down the cherry tree. The same guy.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Sounds like a bunch of urban legends.
I know, right? That's all a bunch.
Yeah, it could be. What? So... I've got.
I've always heard that story though, but now that I think, I'm like, that is weird. About the he calls out yeast.
Yeah.
So that's just like one of those examples of where you can
whole
always learn something.
Yeast.
You're like, oh, when did they find out about yeast then?
Right.
Like I always thought it was Louis Pasteur.
So it sounds like he was making about a barrel of beer. It was like 33 gallons total.
Mm-hmm. With loss.
Yeah. And he adds a whole quart of yeast. Are those similar metrics to what you do now? Would you add a quart of yeast?
I do it by weight. So,
gotcha.
I don't know. He's probably throwing more than he needs to because they didn't know what it looked like. So.
Like
makes
better
sense.
Like,
right,
overpitch
like,
than underpitch?
Yeah, exactly. He wants enough healthy stuff in there.
So are you, from where beer was to beer now, are you pretty impressed with what civilization has done?
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Yeah. I mean, do you think you could have been a brewmaster back in the day and survived? And made quality beer based on the knowledge you would have had?
I mean, at the time, it probably would have been quality.
It's interesting to know.
It's
like,
because I mean, quality changes because, like, the more you know,
so you're saying,
more you can share.
Sean today and Sean 10 years down the line, you're going to tell me Sean 10 years down the line is going to be even better than Sean now? Because we,
Wyatt
and I
learned more stuff.
Idolized you. We think you're awesome about this. But can you just imagine what beer you can do, like, what you can do with beer in the future? That's just, like, to me, just your level of brew mastery from now to then is exciting. I'm excited for you.
No, yeah, it's, I mean, there's always something to learn with it, so.
That's beautiful.
Yeah.
I like that. I like how civilization is slowly growing. It goes back to what we know. When knowledge increases, behavior changes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And as soon as we, our knowledge is increasing, we know, hey, let's not just throw a random amount of yeast in there or molasses in there.
See, you learn what yeast is.
Honestly.
Yeah, well, let's keep track of this. Beautiful.
I'm excited for you, Sean, to see where your beer takes you, honestly, because you have a craft now, and White and I appreciate your craft now, but it's going to get even better as time goes on. You're like getting a fine wine. You're going to get better with age. And I like that. Beautiful.
Hey guys, thanks for listening. This has been David and White on the Taste Map.